Well, there's a very interesting history here, so I'll give a very generalized overview. But back in the 80s in Europe, there were a great number of cities that were facing very serious problems with respect to open-air drug use, particularly with heroin. And in Europe, where different countries, different languages, different cultures, the federal governments in many places were as slow to address some of the local problems as our federal government is. And so many cities across Europe were faced with people using injecting drugs in public parks or in train stations, and they were dealing with overdose fatalities, and they were dealing with associated crime and what have you, associated disorder. And with many of these jurisdictions, Frankfurt, Germany, for instance, Amsterdam, and other cities, they would go to their provincial government or their federal government, and they would say, hey, we need help here. We've got a problem. And they were not getting a sufficient answer to their pleas for assistance. And eventually, they decided that as municipalities, as cities, they would pursue a solution on their own. And this was a very interesting development. Now, in 1990 or 91, I believe it was 90, many of the representatives from these cities met in Frankfurt, Germany. And they issued what was called the Frankfurt Resolution. And the resolution essentially outlined the position of many of these city stakeholders. These were various officials from these cities that came together. And they basically came to the conclusion that the approach to drug policy in these various jurisdictions was not working, that the enforcement-only approach, or what we would call in here in the U.S. the drug war approach, right, where we're going to criminalize people, we're going to use the criminal justice system to solve this problem, or at least it's going to be the primary mechanism by which we seek to solve this problem, that had failed in these jurisdictions in Europe, and they called for a new approach. Now, they knew that they could not simply draft new federal laws in each of their countries. That wasn't possible at the time. And even the provincial governments, or what we would call a state government, were not necessarily going to move swiftly to change the local laws that could be changed. The cities were thus faced with a scenario where their provincial or their federal governments had decided on this particular criminalization-based approach that the cities were now saying, hey, this no longer works for us. But the cities said, well, what can we do? Even if we can't change all of those laws at these higher levels, what can we do here locally so that we can approach these problems in a different way, even if we're approaching those problems within the old context? And that was a very, very important development, because it meant that the cities were going to be proactive in dealing with some of these local problems. They were not going to let the fact that their provincial or federal governments were not moving swiftly enough to come to a realization of certain failures. They instead were going to just move forward and do what they could at the local level. And it turns out there was a lot that they could do, even given that their larger regional or federal governments had decided on maintaining the status quo. And Frankfurt is a particularly interesting example as a city, which is what the resolution was named after. They began to look at what was being done in other places and in other countries, particularly in Switzerland. And they said, okay, well, the first thing that we need to do is to have everybody sitting down together. We need to have all of the stakeholders who care about this issue sit down together and identify what the problems are so that we all understand the problems in the same way, and then identify what solutions we can pursue. And they started to do that, and they did what every Monday they held what was called the Monday Round. And it was all of these stakeholders every single Monday would sit down, including the police. And over time, what they did in Frankfurt was fairly remarkable. They didn't, it was not a fairy tale story by any means, and there was no silver bullet. But they were able to convene various stakeholders, many of whom were oftentimes at odds with each other or had previously been in adversarial positions. they got together and said, look, let's work together on this, and they started to identify what things they could change locally. And a lot of that had to do with how they were policing, how they were addressing the problem locally, how they were thinking about what possible solutions were available, and how they were coordinating the various social service apparatuses that were there to provide the essential services that were needed. And in Switzerland, when they did this, they developed this concept called the four pillars. They said there's generally speaking four areas where we have got to make sure that the stakeholders are coming together under. One is prevention, one is treatment, one is enforcement or public safety, and one is harm reduction. And Frankfurt implemented those four pillars, so to speak, and many other cities did as well. And this was done in many cities across Europe through the 90s. Well, if you fast forward into the early 2000s and you look at Canada, our neighbor, you had something very similar happen, particularly in Vancouver, the nation's second largest city. It has the highest rates of concentrated poverty there in their downtown area. And they were dealing with a lot of the same problems. There was drug-related disorder on the street. There was drug-related crime. There were many people using or consuming drugs in public. There were overdose fatalities. Of course, there's a great amount of poverty as well, and joblessness, and an overall sense of hopelessness amongst many people. But there was a very pioneering and innovative mayor at the time in Vancouver who decided that he was going to take this on. And he and his team began to convene a lot of the stakeholders, and very similar to what happened in Frankfurt and other parts of Europe, they had to bring together stakeholders and key leaders who oftentimes were not on the same page and were even adversarial oftentimes. I mean, the drug user union in Vancouver, which still exists, VANDU, was sitting down with the police force. The social service agencies were sitting down with the police force and people from the corrections agencies. These were not easy meetings, and they were certainly not easy dynamics. The business council was sitting down, the doctors, the nurses, neighborhood representatives, homeowner groups, and so forth. But they did it. They sat down and they worked through some of the difficult meetings, and they developed in Vancouver a four pillars drug strategy, a municipal-based drug strategy for the city of Vancouver that outlined very clearly what the shared objectives were, who was going to be involved, what were the philosophies underpinning those objectives, and how were they going to evaluate whether or not they were achieving those objectives? What was going to be considered a success, and how would they know that they had achieved it? In Toronto, Canada, something very similar happened, although it was more bottom-up as opposed to top-down as in Vancouver. In Vancouver, it was the mayor who said, hey, let's pull everyone together and do this. In Toronto, it was a lot of the local groups and the drug user union, people in recovery. It was a very bottom-up movement, and they said, hey, we need to come together and be smarter about how we're addressing these issues here in Toronto. And eventually, Toronto developed and launched its own drug strategy. And in fact, just recently in May, when we did our conference in Buffalo, we had the Toronto Drug Policy Secretariat. The city of Toronto has a drug policy secretariat. It sounds like a very cool thing, that name. She's the person at the health department whose responsibility is to help coordinate that city's four-pillar drug strategy. Now, these are not silver bullets. These coordinated drug strategies don't solve every single problem. They're not designed for that and shouldn't be viewed that way. However, there are a number of very interesting things that occur in these jurisdictions that have these coordinated strategies. You oftentimes see a reduction in drug-related crime and drug-related disorder. It doesn't disappear, but it does. There are reductions that can be shown in many of these jurisdictions. In Frankfurt, when they did this, there were dramatic reductions. In Vancouver, there were some reductions. In Toronto, you see reductions in the transmission of communicable diseases like HIV and hepatitis C. That's a major development and an important one that we have to maintain a very steady commitment to. You see reductions in overdose fatalities. This is huge. In Vancouver, through the process of their development of a coordinated drug strategy, they decided to do what's now very common in Europe, which is to open up a drug consumption site. They call it their supervised injection facility. This may be startling to many people in New York or in the U.S., but this is common public health practice in many parts of Europe and now in Vancouver. It's a room where people can go in and consume their drugs under the watchful eye of medical personnel. In Vancouver, people using this facility, there's not been one overdose fatality since the facility opened up. This is an incredible development, considering that accidental overdose fatalities have become a leading cause of death here in New York City and around the state. For many of the people who walk into that facility, they're gaining access to services, many of them for the very first time. And if they had, some of them who had not ever planned on going into treatment or recovery, decide to do so as a result of coming into that facility. So in these jurisdictions, so much has happened that yields much better outcomes, both with respect to public health and public safety, that it's become something that other municipalities, particularly in Canada, are seeking to replicate. In the province of Ontario, there's over 30 cities now that are moving forward to develop their own municipal-based drug strategy. Some they call the Four Pillars approach, others they call it something else. Whatever it is that they're calling it, the purpose of these strategies is to ensure that stakeholders from many different areas come together, identify shared objectives, and seek to achieve much better outcomes in both public health and public safety. And again, this is fairly common at this point in Europe. It's becoming increasingly common in Canada. And these are situations where the local city has decided that it's not going to wait around for its municipal or its regional government, rather, or its federal government to move forward. Now, in Canada and in many parts of Europe, what's particularly interesting and probably worthy of note for those of us here in the United States is that often these municipal drug strategies survive even though the federal government changes hands between more liberal-leaning governments or more conservative governments. In Canada, when Toronto and Vancouver started their municipal-based drug strategies, the country had a far more liberal government. And then some years ago, that changed, and it's got a very conservative government now. But both of those city municipalities maintain their drug strategies. Of course, this does not mean that they don't have problems. It doesn't mean that there's not ongoing issues that have to be dealt with. Those things are true, too. As I said, this is not meant to be and is not a silver bullet. But it does allow for the cities to have a much greater degree of control over what it is that they're doing, to manage costs much more effectively, to ensure that the left hand and the right hand are working in concert with each other as opposed to working in a contradictory fashion. And of course, as I noted, it's leading to these better outcomes in both public health and public safety, which is one of the reasons why I believe they continue to exist, even if the governments themselves shift from one perspective to another and potentially back again. And that's also been true in Europe, where in many of these places the governments have shifted, but the city strategies have remained the same in terms of making sure that there's a coordinated effort to address many of these problems.